Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Scott Coyne and I'll be your host for this episode. And joining me to chew over the week in Belgian football is our very own, the one and only Mr. Joris Beck. How are you, Joris?
It was a very busy, has been a very busy couple of days at work, but I am fine. I'm glad to be able to talk about Belgian football once again. Even though the person that actually went to a game in Belgium this weekend is not joining us today. But okay. Yeah, that's how things roll sometimes.
That's right. Yeah, we always manage to find time here to kind of cover Belgian football properly in between all of our other things in life. Joris is mentioning our Ben, of course, who is not with us this week because, believe it or not, and prepare to laugh, I think, and I'm not sure exactly where he is right now, Joris, but we reckon he's somewhere between Belgium and the UK. Our Ben's been in Belgium over the last few days, and as Joris was saying, and we got very excited about last week, on last week's episode, Ben was at a game this past weekend. Ben was at the Glamco to take in Ghent against Westerlo. We were hoping to have some of Ben's thoughts on the game with us, but he's been that busy that he hasn't even managed to get them to us yet. So don't worry, listeners, we will make him suffer for that. Me and Joris will cover the game in his absence. Shall we start with the scores roundup, Joris, as we always do? We'll go through the weekend scores before we dive right in. Friday evening kicked off with a big game at the Jan Breydel. Cercle drew 1-1 with Standard. Saturday saw Kortrijk and Leuven draw 0-0 in the basement battle. The game that our Ben was at, Ghent and Westerlo, was another draw that finished 2 each. And Charleroi lost convincingly 4-1 to Club Brugge on Saturday evening. Sunday began with a big Limburg derby. St. Truiden won, Genk won, and there's plenty to cover on that one coming up. Eupen managed to get a surprise win, you might say, against Mark van Bommel's Antwerp. They won 1-0. There was another big derby, of course. There was the Brussels derby on Sunday evening. Anderlecht drawing 2-2 with Union Saint-Gilloise, probably one of the best games of the weekend. And the final game of the weekend, Mechelen got 3 points. They won at home against Molenbeek 3-1. Let's dive in right at the top, Joris, shall we? Let's go to the Jan Breydel. Friday night, Cercle and Standard, a draw probably fair. Standard not able to see this one out. And a draw really neither suits either side, does it?
Not really, but well, this was probably the result that that this game deserved as well. Maybe even a goalless draw, but luckily for us, at least for as a neutrals, it's nice to have some goals in it if it has to end in a draw. Yeah, Cercle Brugge losing a bit of touch with the top six is what you would expect after this game. It's not completely the truth if you look at the other results in the weekend, but well, they will be happy to have gotten that point. Yeah, Muzlic was also quite earnest in his interview afterwards. Like, I think a draw was deserved, but we would hope that we would win, but we would not have been deserved. Are the big lines of what he was saying. This was not a great game of football. The XG in the expected goals in the first half was 0.33 against 0.07. Collectively, must be one of the most of the worst halves of the season. One team not getting many in one half or in a whole game, that happens often. But two teams, yeah, that really shows the quality of the game, at least in the attacking parts of the teams. And yeah, Cercle Brugge also will need to come bounce back a bit since they have dropped a few points lately. But yeah. I looked a bit at their schedule for the rest of the season, and they do have some winnable games at the end of the season for sure. Until then, I guess they will need to hold on a bit. But you would also have thought, I also have to put that in, then this would be a winnable game for them as well. And they did not perform as well as they would have hoped for before. Yeah. And on Standard, yeah, of course, still no wins on Releco, but he did get his first point. No wins in 7 league games now, though, as well. That's more worrying than just the start in the Lego. That was on the 25th of November, the last win. And they still have the second worst attack in the league as well. To list that a bit in the team. So Kanga and Kawabe both got 6 goals, but then their third goal scorer is Soa, who scored 2. And all the rest of these are the only 3 players that have scored more than once this season. So yeah, they are really struggling in attack. And like I said, not a first point for Leko, but still a bad start. And this time, the way of playing was, in comparison to last week, not great anymore. I do it already. While at the same time, they showed some efficiency. They scored with their one only attempt on targets, as far as I could see. And that one was it narrowly bounced over the line as well. It was actually headed to the bar from Fossey, and then bounced indeed just over the line before coming out with a deflection from Settler already. Like you already mentioned, I guess, like a point, nobody Standard doesn't really get away from like worrying zone yet. Circle failed to jump a bit ahead or make the connection with the top 6 even more now, despite the results going all the other results, most of the other results go their way from the other teams this weekend after they played, so they will be a bit relieved, maybe is the word. With that, and that they're still within touching distance, though, of the top 6. And of course, regardless of whether they make that or not, they're having a good season. It's not an example of that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I noticed after the game, Ivan Leko in his post-match, he was talking about how the point in the end is probably not that bad, because he was talking about these are the sorts of games where the side that scores first usually wins it, and unfortunately they couldn't quite hold on, as I was saying. And he was honest enough to recognise that obviously Cercle are in a much better place than Standard at the moment generally, you know, a side who are pushing for playoff one, exactly the sort of position that Standard would kind of love to be in. So I think he was really concentrating on, you know, the few positives really in a way that they could kind of take out of the game, considering they took the lead, you know, so late on. Obviously, the transfer window is closing on Monday in Belgium, so the window's narrowing all the time. Standard have, just today, as of recording, brought in another defender, Jonathan Panso, who, funnily enough, is an ex-Cercle Brugge defender as well. Another link between the two clubs. He's come in today. The window's been kind of quite quiet for Standard. We've seen more outgoings than we have incomings, which isn't a surprise really to anybody. They've got a little some injury worries as well ahead of the next couple of weeks as well to kind of key players. As well, Joris, which will be a concern to kind of Ivan Leko with some big games coming up as well. So he'll be really keen to get his first win on the board, I think, won't he?
Absolutely. And they will also need it to actually not getting really dragged into it. We've been talking about it a lot, but like to get really in the danger zone. Because they're actually very, very close to that now.
Yeah, things are pretty precarious, and you know, people are pointing that out all the time. Speaking of precarious positions, let's move on to the big basement battle between the bottom two this weekend. Kortrijk and Leuven playing out a 0-0 draw at the Gildensporen. Pretty drab game. I mean, very little excitement in it. And I don't know about Joris, could you feel the fear, feel that sort of, for God's sake, just don't lose this game?
Yeah, well, obviously, like I was talking about, the first half between Cercle and Standard not generating a lot of expected goals. Both sides here actually did slightly better, but really just narrowly, what was it, 0.16 against 0.29. So combined, that's slightly better, but definitely only marginally better than Cercle and Standard. And that's a 0-0 is maybe a result you might expect with win sides like in games with sides in trouble like both those sides. But another clean sheet for Kortrijk, though. So they still have, they yet have to concede under Alexanderson. So he, it looks like at least defensively he made some progress with the players, with the current squad. And also he got two clean sheets, I believe now. So, well, no, I'm sure he did, but I do believe that he, that that's actually also already more than the other managers that, that they had this season combined as well. I think they only had one clean sheet before this one, this series. But yeah, creating chances still and scoring still a big issue. Like, I mean, you already know Standard, if you have listened carefully, the, that Standard have the second worst attack. But yeah, they still have scored 7 goals more than Kortrijk. They scored, so Standard is at 20 goals and Kortrijk at 13 in 22 games, I believe it is now. So yeah, that's, yeah, that, that's really, they really need that area to improve, to be, to have a fighting chance even anyway at this point. For Leuven, I didn't mention that, write down that much noteworthy. Yeah, maybe Maartens being back in the starting 11 could be important for them. It's the first time since match day 2 that they made starting 11 again after some injuries. So, and yeah, we know he can be a pivotal player for them. And yeah, well, I suppose one standout player with, for them is Lezen, Tobi Lezen in goal again. Didn't need to do that much, but there was this, especially this particular save on a header from Avenatti that really stood out, and that saved, that salvaged the point for Leuven in this game. And yeah, also for them, I guess, for both sides, getting a clean sheet is the main takeaway that we'll get from this game, and not losing against a direct opponent.
Yeah, as I was saying, I could definitely feel the fear watching this one. Just on Kortrijk, they've been marginally the better of the two sides this weekend. I thought, you know, Freyr Alexandersen has had a pretty positive start. We were talking that up a little bit last week because it's been so noticeable. I mean, that's 4 points out of his first 6, which is pretty good. Like you say, you know, they haven't conceded yet under him. He'll be a little bit frustrated, I think, all round, because, you know, there's so many positives really at the moment. Kadri's been getting better again, you know, a big player for them. Looked like they were going to lose him. Looks like he's staying a bit longer. Wasn't playing that well for a while, probably wasn't that happy actually because of a lot of things going on at the club, but seems to be getting a little bit better again. And then another big negative really this weekend in terms of the playing staff is they've lost Marco Canna for a little while too, who I think has been kind of pretty important for them. And I think Freyr Alexandersen really, you know, really values him in the middle, and saw a real role for him there. So, you know, kind of feels sometimes like, you know, maybe 2 steps forward, half a step back for him a bit at the moment. On Leuven, on the other hand, I think they've only won 1 in the last 11, something like that now, which is pretty desperate. And, you know, the little positive signs over the last few weeks are just that, very, very little things, really struggling at the moment. And it just, it feels like some of the sides down there in and around Leuven are yeah, just performing a little bit better at the moment. And certainly as the weeks go on, I get a little bit more worried about them now. Looking at their schedule, they've got a tricky month coming up. They've got Genk away, Genk at home actually, then they go away to Westerlo, and then they go to Skleisen to play Standard. So there's some, you know, big games there for Leuven, and ones that you don't necessarily see a lot of points in. So the morale there is, you know, that body language uplift that I talked about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago now, that ran for maybe 2 weeks at most, seems to kind of petered out, and they're definitely toiling at the moment.
Yep, but on the, to look at it from a positive point as well, of course, they didn't lose that in the last 2 games either, so that's a positive for them. And they were now, despite other teams gathering even more points, at least that's a positive, I guess. But the same goes for them as for Kortrijk, I guess. They need to score more as well.
That's right. Yeah, speaking of not losing, and I should thank you for that perfect segue. We like segues here. We'll move on to another game where nobody lost. And also a game that our Ben was at, of course, as I was saying, Ghent drawing 2-2 with Westerlo at the Galamco.
Ghent Arena since this season.
Yep.
Sorry. And you also well, first, it yeah, before. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, look, he's quite right to pick me up on that, listeners. He's quite right to pick me up on that. You know, that's why he's here. Yeah, I thought Westerlo were really, really good this week, Joris. I don't know about you. Really good at pinning Ghent high up the pitch and not letting them get out. Conversely, of course, that meant they were vulnerable to the long balls. It was really interesting to hear Hein van Heijsenbroek picking up on this in the post-match. He was talking about how they struggled to kind of get a hold and a grip in the game because of, you know, Westerlo kind of pressing them hard and high and getting a lot of joy with that, actually, getting in and behind the Buffaloes quite a few times. They'll be really disappointed not to have won this one, I think, Joris. Romeo Vermaant, obviously coming from Club Bruges, Club Next, on loan to join somebody he knows very well at Westerlo, of course, Rick DeMille. Really good debut, getting a debut goal. Arguably should have had more. Had a really good game, I thought. And, yeah, again, struggling for control, unable really to break through those Westerlo lines, even when they did get a bit of a grip in the game, which was interesting. And, yeah, just a frustrating evening for Westerlo, considering they played so well.
Yep, they will definitely, woe a bit, themselves a bit, since, they conceded twice late in the both halves as well. Ghent haven't lost with not getting that win. Ghent haven't lost against Westerlo since 2009 now, which is comes in the league that is. I don't know about the cup, but 17 league games anyway. So that's half a season they have played them more or less already, and without losing them against them. But they needed Schmidt for that. He was quite good in goal, a few good saves, especially in the first half. Westerlo were playing really well and then creating a lot of chances. But it's no coincidence that Ghent scored on set pieces, though. They scored 18 out of their 39 goals, so almost half of their goal production on set pieces. That's including 4 penalties, but regardless of that, it's still 14 on other kinds of set pieces. So that's still very impressive. Still more than 1/3 of their goal production, which is and that's not on a low scoring production, goal scoring production either. Yeah, and for Westerlo, like I mentioned, twice conceding in the final minutes of each half will be really annoying the Rick DeMille and his staff. I also know that, like, another point, but they will be relatively happy with that, but they might regret later that they did not win this game, because they're actually on an upward trajectory, but they're not there yet. They're not completely out of any danger zones at all. It's really getting crowded in that area where they're standing, actually. And on that note, of course, probably an unexpected point, so a point one, which is what you would think before the game. After the game, I think the sounds out of the dressing room will be different.
Yeah, really entertaining game this, actually. And, you know, Ben got his fair share of drama, obviously, of course, with that virtually last gasp winner. Equaliser rather than winner, actually. Must have felt like a winner for Ghent in some ways, considering, you know, how hard they kind of toiled in the evening. They seemed a little bit off it. I was listening to Big Hein's post-match afterwards, actually, and he was talking about... He referenced Sven Coombs and Julien Desart specifically, and said the great thing about those two players, he was saying, is that they give them a little bit extra. You know, their work rate is going to be, you know, really high, and, you know what I mean, they're going to fight hard for the side. And he said that, he was hinting very heavily that he wanted more of his players to perform at the level that they kind of set. Which I thought was interesting. And then he said something even more interesting than that, when he said he'd been having a look at the data and the numbers, the basic things like, you know, distances covered and things like that. And he said that he was actually a little bit worried that the squad generally was underperforming across some kind of key metrics and numbers. And I think that probably kind of feeds into perhaps why they've they've had a disappointing January. I know we were talking for months in the build-up to January about how key the month could be because of losing various players. And in a way, they've come off the rails a little bit, you know, two defeats and a draw, not so much because of players that they've lost, but just because the players that have been there, who are more than good enough to pick up 3 points still, have been underperforming. And I think that's what Big Heim was getting at, that perhaps too many players are underperforming and, you know, they're over-reliant on, you know, big hitters like Coombs and Desart to, you know, kind of drag them along. So I think that was a bit of a warning shot across the bow of some of his own players.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, the results definitely have been disappointing, of course, eliminated in the cup, and yeah, grabbing only one point, even though it's a late equalizer, so that will have felt a bit sweet. But yeah, in these two league games, they didn't come out of the winter break in good form. That is clear, and okay, maybe it will be good for them that January is soon over, for at least the window to be over, and then also, of course, getting various players back from various international competitions as well with their countries. Despite what Scott is saying, indeed, like they should still have enough quality to do better than what they did here, at least also performance-wise, not only even in the points haul, but in the performance levels, they really have been poor generally in this month.
Yeah, I suppose on a positive note for them, they have been splashing the cash in the last couple of days. Obviously, their coffers have been filled recently with some big sales. Obviously, Gift Orban leaving and Malik Fofana both leaving for pretty big fees. They've spent 8 million of that in the region of. They've brought in Sonko, who was a young player of the year actually last year in Sweden. So he's coming to the Pro League with a pretty big reputation. There was a lot of interest in him. He really seems to have kind of bought into the kind of project that the Buffaloes have presented to him. So that's quite an exciting one, I think, not only for Ghent fans, but, you know, people who will know him from his time in Scandinavia as well. A lot of interest in him, as I was saying, and, you know, I think that's obviously a factor, one of many factors in why they've been forced to pay what is a pretty rich fee, I think, kind of at this stage. You know, when a lot of clubs get involved, it tends to drive the price up a little bit. And that's certainly something that's happened here.
And, of course, a fun fact, Teddy's manager has the infamous last name of Bayat. But no, it's not it's not the one you think of now. It's as far as we could find out so far, it's not a connection. There's no straight family bonds. I guess Bayat probably is a relatively common name in Iran. But but it's still a funny coincidence to mention.
Yeah, we like coincidences if there is such a thing. But yeah, they've been splashing the cash, as I was saying, and I think there could be, before the window closes on Monday, just in a few days, there could be yet more movement. A lot of talk today, Joris, that Hugo Kuipers could well be on the move before things close, which, you know, will open up all sorts of possibilities for that big pile of cash that they've got to spend as well, and they won't want to leave themselves short there. So that's a club to keep an eye on over the next few days, because there could be some big movement in and out depending on what happens there. Speaking on big movement, lots of goals in Charleroi. Charleroi losing convincingly 4-1 at home to Ronnie Dyla's Club Brugge. And Club Brugge overpowering sides again, Joris, as they've been doing to quite a few recently. I think that's 4 wins in the last 5 in the league. And I know we've been raving about him a little bit because he kind of deserves it, and because I said I didn't see it and he's proved me wrong, as I was saying last week. Thiago's now got 15-22 with 2 assists, and he's now scored in his last 7 games, I think, across all competitions. So he's chomping things up. Bruges at the moment have got kind of pace, power, and a really potent overall balance. And I know that all of us have kind of been looking at Union Saint-Gilloise and Anderlecht and going, really, the race is between those two. I think the form that club are in at the moment, I think it'd be unfair to call them the dark horse, but they're certainly probably the side that Union Saint-Gilloise arguably will be a little bit more worried about looking over their shoulder.
Yes, definitely, especially with the recent history between all the three teams, Union, Club Brugge, definitely. The Union have finally fought off that monster once this season. They've beat them once, but regardless of that, I do feel like Club Brugge at that point in time still was a bit underperforming as well. And like I said, since that game, Club Brugge haven't lost, and that game was already almost 3 months ago now. So definitely they are on an object. They definitely are in spiraling upwards. If that is a saying, because that sounds a bit weird. they're on the up, but still, and they have been for a while. Entering the top three for the first time since a long while as well. Thiago indeed on 15 goals. At this rate, he'll even make it difficult for me to not hold my hands up later in the season. I'm still refusing, but the quality of his finishes this weekend were a lot better than the ones from last weekend. To be fair, and not only to be like, it's still not fair. I'm still probably a bit too skeptic about him, but. At this rate, he will. The form he is in, if he can continue that, he'll definitely drag them in on his own, even into a title race again, which we before the season would have expected. But at certain points in the season, definitely did not look like it would happen this season. We'll see how that continues, of course, both for him and for Club Brugge, but yeah.
Yeah, our Ben was talking, when we were talking about Thiago last week, Joris, Ben made a very good point when he said that actually when you look at his numbers over the last couple of years, it's the second half of seasons where he just kind of comes alive, and this seems to be what's happening here. He did have actually, I think it'd be fair to say, a really kind of quite sluggish start, really. He's always got into kind of quite good positions, but not really done anything with it, and now you know, he's really doing things with it. So he does seem to be the sort of player who takes half a season really to kind of warm up his juices before he starts to produce things, which you know, he really is at the moment. And I think, you know, obviously Kevin Dinkie's still top scorer, but I think Thiago is, you know, if he can maintain this form, it's not going to stay that way for very long, and he's becoming incredibly important to them.
Despite especially you calling me stat man, I'm also not that interested in these numbers. But like I said, like this weekend, these finishes were actually great. The finishes like last weekend, a scrappy penalty and also like a bit of a lucky touch go for an easy tap in. He had too many of those inside his other goals, but if he can keep finishing them like he did this weekend, that will change my opinion. The numbers on itself, well, like, yes, of course, it shows that he's, like I also mentioned that last week, I gave it to him there. He does come into good positions. You also mentioned it here a minute ago. That's actually no doubt already. Like, I'm just, and of course, if he keeps doing that for us, as much as he is at the moment, it doesn't even matter, of course, how he finishes. But the eye also wants something.
Yeah, is it just on his finishes? Actually, he's now finishing what would be considered a lot of half chances as well. So he seems to be going through this phase at the moment where everything he does comes off. It's kind of that period for him, you know. And a lot of it seems to me in watching him to be kind of quite instinctive as well. You know, he's a fairly predatory type striker in a slightly old fashioned way, and I mean that as a compliment. You don't see players that kind of have the attributes that he has that often anymore, and it's interesting that they're the ones that kind of Club Brugge are really benefiting from at the moment. We should, before we move on, Joris, we should really kind of touch on Charleroi, because for weeks now we've been talking about them kind of sliding and sleepwalking into trouble. Obviously now very much in that kind of drop zone. Four defeats in the last six, I think. Only one win, I think, in the last seven, I think it is. They're really struggling to score, and it goes without saying that they're conceding too many. And I'm just kind of not sure what the right thing for Felix Mazu is at the moment.
Yeah, if he even will have a lot of choice, if it continues like this, I don't think he will have for that long, despite, of course, his merits at the club. But yeah, I feel like even that is now crumbling. And yeah, the fans are not happy. They also made that clear during the game, getting a bit more louder about their how dissatisfied they are with the lack of reinforcements in this window. And specifically also with President Mehdi Bayat. Yeah, to mention that name again. But yeah, really, yeah, I had put this down, and it's still true, and it's a sad thing to say though. But Bernier's they seems to be patenting lately in consolation goals after being four down, because he did that 2 weeks in a row now. He scored late in the game when they were four down. He scored the 4-1 only. Yeah, only irritating the opponent's goalkeepers that won the clean sheet, but nothing else, of course, happens with that. And yeah, more worrying, of course, like I said, they conceded four goals twice in a row now as well. They're, even though, of course, not against the easiest opponents, so okay, it can happen. But their organization, which used to be their strong point, and especially is supposed to be one of Mazu's strong points, seems to be completely lost. Since not only, of course, these last 2 weeks skew it a little bit, but yeah, they're also actually getting in that goals conceded section in, they're getting very close to the teams that you don't want to be close about, so too close to the bottom of the league there. As turned out later the weekend, they indeed tumbled into the relegation zone once again. And They had crawled out of it earlier in the season, but in the form they're in at the moment, I'm less convinced that they will be able to easily do that again. It's not too late yet, of course, but yeah, definitely some things to ponder about, especially also this, indeed, like the fans were saying, the lack of reinforcements. Now it seems like it's not completely official yet, but they're also losing Ken Kuba as well. To maybe make a slow segue towards the next game already as well. So it looks like Kenan Kuba is going to sign for Genk as the replacement of Daniel Munoz. That they would even be losing some players. Will they do something with the money they get there? Because it's they do get a fee for that, of course. Not a super... A fee you can do something with is what you would think, especially since... At least financially, the last 2 years, they actually have been one of the healthier clubs. But they will need to do something with that money now, I guess. And not only build a stadium, because, of course, a lot of it is probably going into that. But I think it will be important for them that if they're working on that, if it comes to that, that they are still in the first division as well.
Yeah, there's a kind of a lot to ponder there, isn't it? A lot of moving plates at the same time. It's interesting, kind of you talking about the new stadium and hinting at finances there, because I remember Ben last week was making the point in relation to Charleroi that their recruitment generally for a while now has been questionable, to say the least. And if you were to rate it, you would definitely mark it under poor. But again, there's external factors there that I think probably are at play here, you know, like the stadium and obviously the new shareholders as well, which is a positive because it gives them more maneuverability, but it has implications for things kind of day to day there as well. Let me throw out a big question to you, because I did want to ask this to you, and you hinted that perhaps Felix Mazu might not be there that much longer, which I'm glad you raised, because there's two T1s at the moment who I think are really, really vulnerable. Felix is one, and the other one, who we probably should talk about now, even though we've not got to their game yet, and that's Molenbeek's Claudio Cacapa. The pressure's been rising there, obviously, recently. Fans are not happy. Real slide, much like Charleroi. Which one of those two do you think is the more likely to find themselves out the door in the short term?
I don't like speculating on negative things here. That's a bit nasty. But if you ask me the question, if they both get to the end of the season, my answer will be both not, though. So I think that's already worrying for both of them. Okay. It's not fair to pick one of them, I guess. It's not really my task, even though you specifically put me on to task it. It might happen at the same point as, in time as well. And if so, I think it will happen inside the next 2 or 3 weeks for both of them.
Yeah. It was one of my big takeaways from this weekend when I looked at kind of the bigger picture and all of the results. I thought that those two T1s, those two gentlemen, were really in hot water. And I actually think, you know, to be honest with you, I think it's a bit of a toss up as to which one kind of might go first. I think it's going to really come down to results, obviously, as it always does. And it's not going to take much for something to change for one of them. I think for that decision to be made, it's one of the wonderful things about presenting the BFP, everybody. You get to ask those difficult, nasty questions and put our Joris on the spot. And he can plead the Fourth Amendment very professionally, like he did there. But he did give me a segue a few minutes ago, which I didn't take, which I will take now. Ken Nkuba, Charleroi's Ken Nkuba, as Joris was saying, looks like he's on his way to Joris's Genk. And the big game of the weekend for many across Belgium, depending on your persuasion, was, of course, the Limburg derby, St. Truiden against Genk. It finished one each. Really quite a strange game in lots of ways. Really interested to get Joris's take on this one. I thought, and I'll touch on St. Truiden just for to begin this one, Joris. Started really, really poorly. Were poor for, I think, you know, the majority of the game. Only transpired later on, of course, very publicly. There was probably a very good reason for this. And for those who don't know, St. Truiden's goalkeeping coach, Dennis Rudel, actually collapsed during the warm-up with what at the time everyone thought was a heart attack, but it turns out it was an asthma attack. No less serious, actually. Dennis is going to be okay. He was taken to hospital and is going to recover, but I think that did really upset St. Truiden's rhythm even pre-match. Torsten Fink saying afterwards that, you know, it was really quite difficult for the players to do their thing, understandably, in the circumstances, because they didn't know what was going on. So that was a huge factor in disrupting them. Genk, obviously, taking the lead. They thought twice very early on. One of them was chopped off. But just a sense, as St. Truiden managed to kind of gather themselves early in the second half, Joris, and Genk not managing to take advantage of their relative domination, they just seemed to kind of lose their composure, as did the fans. The away fans, obviously, decided to kick off a little bit. And as a result of all of that, we saw two red cards as the red mist descended a little bit.
Yeah, okay. First of all, also, like, the Ken Nkuba transfer has been made official just 15 minutes ago, so now we can actually talk about it. Yes, before touching on the game, or, well, actually more, like, I want to say this game had everything a game needs, except a good level of football, I suppose. What was it? Tractors delaying the farmers' protests, like they are happening around all of or a big part of mainland Europe, and not only mainland Europe, I think, even delaying the start with 30 minutes, early and late goals, very early, quite late goals, a missed penalty, red cards, flares. Indeed, and the story with the heart attack and what would become the asthma attack. Luckily, before the game, that only came out after the game. Yeah, but yeah, the quality of football was arguably not great. I'm not trying to dwell too much on many things actually, but fourth consecutive draw in the Limburg derby for sure though, Genk not playing particularly well themselves, but despite that, had enough chances then to kill off the game, and they should have done that. For example, Hanne with the ball with a header that was taken off the line, also hitting the bar at another occasion. And of course, then there was a lot of controversy afterwards, after that. But yeah, I feel like this one they should have killed off earlier. I'll try not to sound too condescending. Luckily, it's about my own team, so luckily that might dampen the blow a bit. But they are really not the most, how to phrase this delicately, football intelligent, I guess. A bunch of players or inside the squads that they always find a way to rile themselves up while they don't necessarily need to get dragged into things they should probably better stay out of, which has also transpired into the whole club, I fear, a bit. The mentality in the whole club, and yeah, that's making it feel a bit like, luckily it's not as dramatic as it sounds like that, but like serial losers for the stature that they are and for the team that they should be, or we know that they can be. Just that they always seem to be something since more or less, I guess, but I don't want to put it that down on that, but like more or less since the departure of Paulo Nwachu and then the terrible 2023, I guess, as in the points haul, and dramatic in Europe, in the league and in the cup, in all competitions they've had dramatic moments already. And yeah, of course every side has that. It's also part of what makes the sports and so great, all a lot of the emotions. But they're focusing too much on the negatives and getting dragged into things which they should not. It might also be worth mentioning, like we were last week also talking about that, and maybe it's a good time now. So like to mention it, like the game where Anderlecht Genk seems to, that it's going to be replayed, although it's now appealed from the other side, from Anderlecht side as well, of course. Yeah, I mean, I'm not in favor of that, but I can't blame them completely for trying it, obviously, since they actually got a point and there was a mistake made. But and a mistake made, and luckily in a way, I guess maybe it's also worth pointing that out as well, because I also had the same reaction a bit, like the Pandora box is open now. It's not completely the case, because Club Brugge and Mechelen didn't it was not ruled for that game would be replayed because of the difference in the kind of mistake, and like I feel like everyone is still mistaken in this kind of mistake, like a human error or a mistake against the regulations. Yeah, it is a thin line. I can see that, but like if that are the regulations, it makes it a bit less easy that the box of Pandora is not completely opened because of that, because a lot of things you can write off as a human error, I guess, but other things not, and that's a very rare occasion. That seems to have been the case. Whether that's already the reason why you would really fight and go into court for replaying a single game of football. Yeah, that I'll leave that open for debate, but I'm not in favor of that. But it is what it is.
I think the replay issue is something that's caused lots of people huge frustration, not just fellow Genk fans, but fans of other teams. And the Pandora's box that Joris is kind of referring to, I think, is definitely open, because even since that decision, we've seen other clubs kind of coming out and, trying to take advantage of that. And in fact, one of them is Molenbeek, who we're going to talk about shortly, because they had a result this weekend, Joris, which went against them. But because of a particular decision in that game, they're now trying to kind of take advantage of that and are looking for a replay themselves. And the danger is, I think that, clubs obviously start to look for mistakes and try to take advantage of that, and it just brings everything into disrepute. And we know we want referees to be better, but this added pressure, I think, doesn't And it's a slightly converse argument. It doesn't really help them get better by piling even more pressure onto them. I think this has to be done in a very gentle way. And clubs sometimes, I think Molenbeek this week particularly, in looking for a replay, are just beginning to make a bit of a fool of themselves, to looking a wee bit foolish, because we know, for those who haven't seen the detail, the interesting thing about Genk's case was, legally, they did have quite a strong case, because their argument was based on the fact that there'd been an actual misapplication of the rules, and it wasn't simply a bad interpretation of a decision. So, you know, what is legally perhaps the right decision is one that has, you know, bigger implications for everybody. While we're actually still on Genk, Joris, I wanted to ask you something quite specific about them. They've lost two really big hitters, Arteaga and Munoz. What are the implications for that, do you think? Because although there are replacements there, and there will be change, obviously, inevitably, when players leave, two huge personalities, two really big and important players for the club.
Well, you can divide that. Arteaga, a bit less unhappy that he left. Not completely convinced with Sobol as his replacement, especially... since that actually already has come out, that it's basically they were looking for a cheap option because they can't splash too much money, because they have to use the money for also there a bit for stadium works and infrastructure works anyway, and just in general they need to generate more than they lose structurally every year, and in the European campaign unfortunately was disappointing, so can't cover all of it. But yeah, so. On Arteaga leaving, I'm not too unhappy about. He also got a red card. Nice send off in his final game, of course. Yeah, but okay, apart, and that might have cost him the points in the end as well. But yeah, we'll never know. But yeah, just never been completely convinced. I've always liked his style as a player, but his defending, unfortunately, was a bit too much lacking. That's not the biggest loss. That's then regardless of the replacement, if it does better or not. But Munoz is a different story, of course. That's official. It's also only been officially announced today, but he has been coming for a week or so. Yeah. Luckily, I will say, I need to say that last week he didn't show up for training, so that was a bit of a worrying sign, but it looks like that was all. He actually was one of the first players on the club, and I actually just informed the coach, manager Franke, about it. Everything actually went in a relatively friendly atmosphere, I guess. Didn't want to mess with the preparation of the game and so on. So, okay, at least there's no sour taste in his leaving, except that it's January, of course, but... that's not his fault. That's the fault of having this window in the middle of the season, which is getting more and more ridiculous with the inequalities in the markets as well across the league, or across all the leagues in the world, and especially in Europe. But it is what it is. Yeah, of course, he will be missed a lot more. His impact, especially the last two seasons, but also before that, but especially last season, also in numbers. It's been really, really great really big from at right back this season, scoring a lot of goals. Last season, scoring a lot of goals, giving a lot of assists at the same time as well. We'll have to see. So yeah, now it's Nkuba apparently who came back. I'm relatively happy with that signing. Don't think he can immediately replace him, especially also he has had some injuries already, even though despite being still very young, he's also only came back only a month or so now from a knee injury. So it will be, will remain to be seen how he evolves. And of course, also a little bit worried, Munoz also had this combined this great attacking numbers, which even though not necessarily being the best defender, but just to at least with a great fighting spirit in defense, and really, he actually I think had like an influence on the group as well, in the sense of the mentality, fighting back and making it difficult for your opponent. Even though also at him, I sometimes have to admit, I've been in doubt that he is a really good defender. Like he, in defense, he sometimes like, but I guess everyone does. And that's a worry I share a bit with Nkuba because, he's actually a bit more of a player for a line, one line higher on the pitch, which is the same with what they're trying to do with Eluwadi and what they did before with the likes of Mala and a few others as well. And sometimes works out and sometimes not. But it fits a bit with the Genk philosophy, I guess. But that's an additional worry, of course, that can he do that? He has played on the right wing back in a three or five man defense, however you look at it. Can he do that also in a four man defense? Yeah. So it's a bit of a a gamble on the
mixed bag.
It's definitely a mixed bag. It's just like for sure he won't be able to replace Munoz completely, but now there are two players there which I believe in, but I'm not especially on the longer term, and let's see, we'll have to see what the impact is on the short term, and there I'm a bit more doubt.
Yeah, speaking of mixed bags, St. Truiden, on the other hand, they've had a bit of a mixed bag themselves this week. Obviously, Matt Smets, who looked like he was going to Ghent, the clubs had agreed a fee. He was thinking about it. He has thought about it, and he's now decided to stay. So that was really good news for Torsten Fink and St. Truiden, obviously, that he'll be staying until the end of the season, at least. And I suppose the negative bit of news, Daiki Hashioka has gone to Luton and not Leeds. We all thought it was Leeds, including Torsten Fink, who in his pre-match interview was actually asked about this and said that he was resigned to losing him to Leeds. So between kickoff and a few hours later on, the phone had been ringing. Luton had been on the phone, and Hashioka has gone to Luton. So one bit of good news, one bit of bad news. Some money has come in, obviously, because of from the Hashioka deal. We know, Joris, that St. Truiden have been showing some interest in RFC Liège striker Adriano Bertaccini, top scorer in the Challenger Pro League at the moment. A fee couldn't be agreed, but I think with that transfer fee from Hashioka, there'll be a little bit more wiggle room now. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens down Limburg way at the Daewoo Wasabi Stadion over the next few days, as well as that window narrows. Let's move on, Joris, away to another game. A slightly surprising result. Erpen managing to get the 3 points, beat Antwerp 1-0 in a game that Antwerp probably should have got a little bit more out of.
Yep, they will have hoped so, but in all honesty, I'm not sure if they actually would have deserved that either. Notably, first ever top flight win from Eupen against Antwerp. Also notably, of course, we touched on that with Schalke already. They are it's Eupen winning meant that they are out of the relegation zone, the relegation playoffs virtually for now. And Schalke are in, make some other sides sweat, not only Schalke, but some other teams as well. Also, remarkable, I guess, that the bottom three before the match day all got the clean sheets in this game day. So, of course, two of them had a bad 0-0 draw between themselves, I guess, but a third sign as well. Actually, first half really playing really well. Second half, Antwerp came a bit better and got a few chances. And then came to a point where even they could take a penalty, and Janssen took it. And unfortunately he missed it. And that's not his first miss of the season. He famously missed two against De Fournier as well, of course. And that's probably all of them. But three misses inside one season is already not a good sign. For Antwerp, actually, not that many good things to say, I guess, to take out away from this game. yeah, Jansen missing penalty indeed. Still only two away wins for Antwerp as well.
Yeah.
We all know now as well that Arthur Vermeer actually indeed left. We were touching on that last week, but now it's also been official. And it's still showing a bit that the lack of depth in that squad a bit. They played with a lot of youngsters. I touched on that last week as well. They ended the game then. Now it's a good thing. I think they do so, of course. But it might be a bit too much. The squad is really thin. The one positive I guess they can take from this though is Ondrejka being back finally as well, and he made a really inspiring sub performance. Also hit a post with a shot and narrowly missed out on another occasion. And he brings something to their game for sure that they were lacking. And they have missed him during his absence, which has taken a long while. I think he was back for like one game in between or something, and then when fell out again or something. I'm not completely sure there, but anyway, his impact after the first few games where he also was playing well, has been very limited. And his impact and his game time because of all these worries. Him being back could be very important for them. And I guess that's indeed the positive they can take out of this game. But not really about the rest of the performance and the result, of course.
Yeah, I noticed there was a couple of things that Mark Van Bommel said after this game that interested me. The first one was he said he didn't blame Vincent Janssen because there was a problem with the pitch and there was a bobble, which, you know, the truth is only known between Mark Van Bommel and Vincent Janssen as to whether that penalty, which looked more like Vincent Janssen was playing rugby than football, is the truth or not. And we're going to speak about another player shortly, actually, who referenced the state of the pitch playing into a mistake as well. The other thing Mark Van Bommel said was that he was expecting some reinforcements ahead of Monday night as well. So I think there's definitely a recognition that Arthur Ramirez is a big loss to them, and they need to do something about that. There has been interest in a number of players. Nothing has yet got close on any of them, but I suspect we'll probably see some movement on that kind of pretty shortly as things intensify with the window closing there. Speaking of mistakes on the pitch or what seem to be mistakes, the big Brussels derby on Sunday evening, early Sunday evening, Joris, Anderlecht 2, Union Saint-Gilloise 2, Jan Vertonghen, we probably should start there. He had a bit of a nightmare, fair to say?
Yeah, you can definitely say that. Of course, at the end, probably a bit less, but yeah. Especially on the first goal, I am a bit with him. He made two mistakes, but he's saying that the second one was not really his fault, at least. Let's go chronologically first. Yeah, the first one is the most obvious one, I guess. Just a low cross coming in after some pressure from Union. And he tried to hoof the ball away, but the ball didn't really hit the ball and it went underneath him. And Nilsson could react very quickly and score the 1-0. And the second one, it's a hard pass back from it's lacking me now who it was from a teammate, from an Anderlecht player anyway. And the ball bounces over his feet, wobbles over his feet, I guess you could say. And Amura was then the faster one to react. Vertonghen was never going to get there anymore, but also no Schmeichel or another defender. Amura, who is already back from the AFCON now, of course, as well. Disappointingly for him and Algeria, I guess, but for Union, really, really good. And, when we're talking about Thiago in good form and scoring his 15th, Amura is now on 14, I think. He's definitely also still in the mix for the top scorer title if he stays. But, I didn't see any rumors at the moment that he would be leaving in January already. And I think that's probably is going to stay like that. But Union were actually playing really well. in Denver Tonga redeemed himself a little bit with heading the 1-2 in from a corner at the point in time where Scott famously has already written in our group, well, I would I would have taken him off already. And maybe that would have happened, although I think with an experienced player as Vertonghen, you probably would not do that. But with if it would have been a youngster, maybe you might have done that. But they, at the moment now, the situation changed a little bit already, I think. But at the moment, at that moment in time, they did not have any real replacement, I guess, that they could actually put for their central backs. They have been very thin on that position, although they now got a reinforcement today, I think, or yesterday, and there might be one more coming their way soon. It was Gattoni, I believe, is a player from Sevilla who already signed, and then there's rumors about the second one. There's nothing official there, so I'm gonna steer clear of rumors. But anyway, so where were we chronologically? 1-2, Vertonghen, who still was on the pitch and stayed on the pitch. And after that, it's not that Anderlecht were playing much better or something. Union probably should have won this game, should have killed this game off.
Yeah.
But they missed their chances. Schmeichel also had a really great save and a few good interceptions. Until in the final minutes, Turgan Azar managed to, in a bit of a scrimmage, not completely a scrimmage, but a bit of a scramble, to hit his first goal for Anderlecht and then put it past the goalkeeper, past Maurice, I guess it was already, again. First time in 9 games now that Anderlecht didn't lose to Union. And what might feel like a win as well is what I noted down, especially since they maybe did not even deserve it this time either. But it will be a relief that they might not have won, but at least managed to get something out of this game. Also against their Brussels rivals as usual, and being first and second in the league at the moment, so crucial to not lose that game. They had lost one prior game against Union in the week as well, of course, and Union kicked them out of the cup. That might also be worth a quick mention here. And with this draw, both teams actually keep their unbeaten runs. I didn't look up how much they are. I think Anderlecht is around 11 and Union probably a bit more still then. I'm not completely sure there. But also, definitely, this draw definitely also meant to mention a team. Well, we already mentioned, talked about them a bit, but also meant that Club Brugge was the only team out of the top eight before the match day, at least, that managed to win a game this weekend. So they really are the winners of the weekend. Some weekends it's not very clear who that is, but this weekend, very clear that award goes to Club Brugge. They took points on everyone that was around them, and they took points back. They went back towards the team in front of them. So despite not being part of the Brussels derby themselves, of course, it seems like Brugge are the winners of this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's no doubting about that at all. I think, you mentioned Anderlecht managing to halt that 8 straight defeats to Union, which was looking like it was going to be 9 until very late on as well. I think that will be a huge relief to everyone associated with Anderlecht. The hex has been broken, as I was saying in my own social media around that. I think that meant a lot to them, just on a psychological scale. And on Jan Vertonghen, because I know we, as long as a lot of a lot of other people have been talking about him this week as well because of that game. The one thing you can't doubt about Big Jan is he steps up and he takes responsibility, which is what he did here. And it was interesting afterwards when he was explaining how the second goal wasn't really a mistake. There was the bobble in the pitch. He said, look, mistakes happen sometimes, and you know, I'm old enough and wise enough and experienced now to be able to just put them behind me. And it was interesting because after the first goal was conceded and they were waiting for the kickoff again, he was standing with his hands on his hips and the camera had a close-up on him, Joris, and he was just shaking his head. You could see he was frustrated with himself. It was just one of those that he had to put behind him, and to be fair, he absolutely did, because he goes and scores what is a very important goal to get them back in the game. So, you know, he's full of character, Jan Vertonghen, and you can count on him, despite the fact I was saying this is so bad, I would hook him. And Joris is right. I'm glad he reminded me of that, actually, because it was within a couple of minutes of me saying that, so it was almost as if Jan heard me. So thanks for that, Jan. Thanks very much. The final game of the weekend, Joris, was at Mechelen, the Achter der Kazerne. Mechelen got the 3 points. They beat Molenbeek 3-1. I say they beat them. They got it over the line in the end, kind of just. This game should have been won well before the end. Made it very, very difficult for themselves in conceding a quite a late equaliser, Mechelen, before Rob Skous stepped up on, 94, 95 minutes and ultimately won it with a rocket from the edge of the box. Mechelen will be very pleased with this. They've been forced to dig deep because, you know, things have been very quiet on the recruitment front. We've talked about some of their issues in recent weeks. So this is exactly the sort of game really they should have been targeting to get the points. Really important for them. Molenbeek, on the other hand, I suppose this is just, you know, a kind of continuation of that slide that seems to have been going on now for a month or so, really.
Yeah, fourth loss in a row for Molenbeek, for RWM. RD, WM, sorry. Despite fighting well after probably one of the quickest red cards for the season, again, I did not completely look into it, but it definitely is in among the top five to easily three, probably, and maybe it's even the fastest. I wouldn't exclude that option. For Mechelen, they are actually in the top half now. Can you believe it?
No.
I believe it's for the first time this season. At least I would think so. They didn't start really well, so I don't think even in the beginning of it they were there. And that comes after three wins in their last four games. So they are, on the other hand, at least in the points, in a good run. Flücke also tripling his goal tally. Scott is probably happy with that.
I'm a bit of a fan as regular.
Happy is a bit, yeah. If a player can triple his goal tally in one game, it's usually not a good sign, of course. So nonetheless, and still, I guess Hoofs stole the attention for Mechelen with that winner. I would have been frustrated as a Mechelen fan, I think, this game at least, with him trying to score, because it was not his first effort from long range in this game. He often does it, of course, that's normal. Like there is, don't score every goal or don't score every second shot from distance throughout your whole career. But you know, he has that shot, of course. But regardless, I felt like just by watching the highlights, I felt like, ooh, okay, he did actually try it a lot this game, and most of them were not very successful, but this one, yeah, went in beautifully and got them the 3 points in the end. How Molenbeek got back into this game was and stayed in this game so long is indeed remarkable, I guess, as well, with being down after 4 minutes already, man down. They fought well, and even after the first Flücke goal, they managed to sneak back into the game with a nice run from Pathé Mboup as well. And I have to admit, like, I also don't get why that was not a penalty with the hands of the Hermans.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Maybe it's looking worse, and it's I can imagine that it's something that looks worse on the images and like in slow motion and all, and like, yeah, that you might not have the time because it's of course the ball was headed by another KV Mechelen player and hit wrongly, and then Herreman's hand is clearly not through next to his body, but
yeah.
Is it a natural position? I guess the time between that header and the ball hitting that position, yeah, it does not really give you the time to get it. So maybe I do get it a bit more, thinking about it a bit more closely. Yeah, and of course, Scott already mentioned the Molenbeek also trying to get this game replayed because of that. Well, maybe not because of that decision, because that would be... Yeah, that's not going to happen because that's a clear mistake, human mistake. But because of what apparently the referee would have said about the situation, and that there he said something that would then indicate towards that he didn't follow the regulations properly, or they made a mistake there again as well. So yeah, that on the mistake itself, you can't really blame it. But yeah, did the referee give away something there that the new award that he just misapplied to the rules? Yeah, okay, that's difficult. And the only thing I also wanted to mention actually before, but like the only thing we can hope that is that somehow in the long run this actually will make it better for the referees and so on. Okay, obviously now we're in a phase where there's a bit of a confrontation between everyone, and let's hope when everything cools down a bit that there's a bit more room for talking about the solutions that are both not putting too much pressure on the referees and the VARs and still are like, yeah, well, don't lead to teams trying to appeal everything all the time. Yeah, I think it's still a bit too recent, and there's still no complete conclusive verdict either, of course, but yeah, that's the only thing we can hope for, I guess, in the long run. I fear for this season we will have to suffer a bit, all of us as football fans, for any side you are.
I think you're right. I think the referees department are going to see an upturn in complaints. I think they already have in the last few days as well. I think just before we move on to talk about the Challenger Pro League this weekend, Joris, it's probably worth mentioning as well, in the last couple of days, Mechelen have seen two outgoings. Jordi Vanlaberg has left and gone to Brøndby. And just today it was confirmed that Jonas Maledi has completed his transfer to Maccabi Tel Aviv. He's gone back to Israel. So that's somewhere in the region of a million, maybe just a little bit over a million in the coffers for Mechelen, which is, you know, it's difficult to understate how important that could be for them, because they have one of the smallest budgets in the division as well. So, you know, that can provide them with a lot of wiggle room. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there over the next few days with the window as well.
I know who you want them to spend that money on as well. He already mentioned him before in this episode already, even so.
Yeah, we did mention Adriano Bertaccini earlier on, who St. Truiden were very, very keen on. I think he's somebody that Mechelen could use. They need reinforcement, certainly at the top end, even though the likes of Nicolas Storm is due back, I think at the end of February, who's going to be very important for them, but obviously won't be completely fit at that point, so they're not going to see the best of him out of this season. So it'll be interesting to see how they use that money, because obviously I think they need to replace Vanlaberg as well. So, you know, the recruitment in Mechelen will be definitely under the spotlight, as it has been for kind of quite a while, like a number of clubs as well. Let's drop down to the Challenger Pro League, shall we, Joris, and just have a wee chat about what happened there this weekend. If you weren't watching, more fool you, but I'll remind you of the scores just in case you weren't. Frank Baran won 3-0 against Beveren. SL16 lost convincingly to Lommel 4-0. Jong Genk beat Anderlecht Futures 3-0. Sarang and Liers drew one each. Dender and Patro Eisden played at a 0-0 draw. Beerschot won 3-0 against Club Next. RSC Liège lost at home to Zelta Waregem, and Oostend lost 1-0 at home to Hans Summers Denza, who are on a very fine run of form actually at the moment, Joris. Denza, not only are they up to third now, 6 wins in their last 8, and they really have got themselves into the mix. Zelta are still in there, obviously. They're second now. Beerschot's win kind of keeps them top. That's the first win for Dirk Kuyt since he came in as the new T1 there. Dropping down to the bottom of the CPL, Oostend are still bottom, but plenty been happening on their front this week. They did get 3 of the 9 points that they were deducted back on appeal, which narrowed that gap slightly, but unfortunately it didn't really help them that much because they did lose this weekend to Denza, as I was saying. So they remain still 2 points from safety. It's looking a little bit better than it was last week. But, you know, still at the bottom. And another thing to watch out for is Liers, whose form remains pretty poor still. They're still on the lookout for their new T1 a couple of weeks on after letting go of Joe Christians. So it'll be interesting to see if anything happens with that over the next few days, because I was expecting to see an appointment by now, Joris.
Yeah, they are taking their time, for sure. And they might not have that time, although, yeah, there's a few teams dropping behind now at the complete bottom of the table. But, yeah, and Liers is not one of them yet. They did get enough points in the last few weeks, but that's mainly just 1 point, I think. But other teams have not gotten much. I need a little bit of a drink, it seems. But they're taking their time, and then they probably should appoint someone because they're not safe yet, despite them not being like in complete real danger either yet. But I don't know what they want to for the rest of the season either.
I think it's quite important for them, isn't it? Because in looking at it, I was thinking about this today actually when I was looking at some numbers, that they really need a couple of wins. Probably just to kind of give themselves, you know, that breathing room, and in order to do that, they really need to make the right appointment, I think. So I can understand that as well, despite the pressure going up on them.
Yeah, they did at least get some signings done, so that might be good and also important. But of course, yeah, a new manager usually also has his own wish list and like in his playing style and everything around that. Let's hope that whoever comes in will be happy to work with the material he has and for all the systems that he has. It's not beneficial that in the transfer window you don't have someone who you can discuss that with. Of course, they do have a caretaker, but apart from that, I assume it's not the plan. Maybe I'm wrong here, but that it's not a plan to go on for the rest of the season with him. And even if so, of course, it's better to look a bit more into the future. Then just the remainder of the season. My other sense on Challenge Pro League is that I'm happy that the start that Jong Genk has taken in the after the break. They haven't lost anything yet, so that's and they also are catching on to the peloton a bit in a safer zone than they were before.
Yeah, an improvement there. And actually, with Joris mentioning Jong Genk, who are always worth keeping an eye on, because there is a lot of talent, I think, in that side. You know, those who watch Belgian football closely will be very aware of that. So Jong Genk are always worth kind of looking out for, I think, for a number of reasons. I think that's just about it for this week's BFP, Joris. It's all go here, as it always is. And it's all go in other ways, because this is one of those weeks where we have a full midweek program of fixtures. In fact, as we speak, there are a couple of games ongoing. Westerlo are currently 4-1 up on Cercle Bruges at halftime, and Club Bruges are 1-0 up on Kortrijk at the Jan Bride. It'll be interesting to see how they finish. Storm in first half there from Westerlo. But yeah, as I was saying, Joris, everyone playing over the next few days. There'll be a full round of fixtures before we even convene once again. So we'll be able to hopefully reference some of those for you and all of the connotations there as well. If you like what we're up to here at the BFP, and frankly, why wouldn't you if you like your Belgian football, you can get in touch with us at our social media, and you can find us all individually as well on social media. So if you've got a question or something you want to pursue with us, you can do that. Equally, if you get an opportunity, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a little review on your podcast platform of choice, wherever you download us and listen to us from. And we also have a Buy Me a Coffee. So if you'd like to send us a small beverage sized bung to help us continue doing what we do, and you enjoy that, then we'd be very appreciative of that. That's just about it, Joris. Thanks for joining me this evening, and have a good few days, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, definitely. And well, Woon, if Westerlo loses against Cercle Brugge this evening, then you heard it here first. 4-5. I'm going for it.
Yeah, plenty of room for drama in the second half, that's for sure. And those, you know, Belgian footballers will know that's not entirely impossible. Great, Joris, thanks. It's been so good to catch up with you. I think Ben will be back with us next week. The full Trident should be back.
We'll see. Maybe he's still stuck somewhere. Also, yeah, another prediction.
Let's see if he's not caught behind that. Yeah, he's not caught behind a pile of tractors. Unfortunately, he wasn't anywhere near St. Truden this weekend. Well, not that near, but near enough. We should be back, the full Trident, me, Ben, and Joris next week. So have a good week, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll see you on next week's episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.